Welcome to one of the first panels here at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. It's my first time here. It feels like Portland, Oregon, to be honest. I hope that's going to change. Anyway, I'm very delighted to have this panel here. We're going to talk about online video and how brands work with online video. I'm Stephanie Lemke. I'm a principal at Quantum Media. Quantum Media is a consultancy for entertainment and media companies, and we work with these clients on digital strategies, and one of my core areas is precisely in online video. We do distribution and content strategies for these clients. But I'm not going to talk about me much. We have wonderful experts here, four of them, and we are talking really about a big movement today, because online video has grown tremendously. It's been called by Comscore the trend for the next year, because actually 100 million Americans watch online video every day. That's a huge number. We started 4 years ago, everyone said this is not going to last. It's just, you know, it's not going to work over the internet, but we see it's growing and growing. And here with me, I have four experts in the area. One is Bob Wheeler, the original This Old House broadcast host. We're very excited, and Bob has put his entire library onto the internet now. It's on bobwheeler.com. Next to him is Gretchen Grant. She's a digital specialist and now the general manager of bobwheeler.com. Mm-hmm. And next to her, we have Joe Epstein. He's the chief marketing officer of the Digital Broadcasting Group. He is replacing the CEO today who couldn't be with us. He's very sorry for that. He had a client meeting to take. And on the far end, we have Steve Mazur. He's a partner of Mazur Law, a company that is specialized in intellectual property, and he's also working in that space for online video customers a lot. So we'll talk a lot about that. Excellent. Just in terms of housekeeping, we'll have this discussion for half an hour. The panelists up here, I'll pose a couple of questions. But then we'd really like to open it up and have you ask these experts questions, because we assume you're coming from brands, you want to know how to do this on the internet. So please don't be shy. There's a mic here. The other housekeeping note is please switch off your cell phones. I did that just now, so it shouldn't be mine when it's ringing. And yes, that should be it. So to start with, maybe we just frame it a little bit by each one of you could tell us a bit what you're doing in this space and how online video is shaping your business. Bob?
Hi. Everybody can hear, I assume. After looking back at what is essentially a 30-year career, a lot of people would probably start looking forward at what might be essentially a 10 or 20-year retirement. And I couldn't abide the thought of that, but the career in terms of producing syndicated television shows was coming to an end with market changes that we all know about in 2007 and then exacerbated in 2008 and 2009. And I had an online presence with bobwheeler.com that really went back to the late 90s, wherein the situation was mostly about taking television content and putting it online in one way or the other. So bobwheeler.com by 2006 was already an online presence with an important track record, but as my then 18-year-old daughter said, "Dad, you're so out of it with your website." And it was kind of the time when I started reassessing where we were going. So in the last 3 years, we went through business reorganizations that I won't bore you with, but we relaunched bobwheeler.com a year ago. And I think one of the key things for me is to continue this kind of presence in the digital marketplace with what essentially is an evergreen brand and an evergreen subject matter, but continuing to grow it in new directions. And those new directions generally revolve around green building technologies, etc. But we've put all the video from all those years of programming on the site. So we've got 1,400 plus pieces of video that are redigitized and that are accessible. People can ask Bob in the forum on our site using the VU tool. We're on Hulu. We are really going in a lot of different directions at once, largely thanks to Gretchen Grant.
So Gretchen, what is your job? How does that look like? What's a day in the life of Gretchen Grant?
Well, a day in the night in the night. we have our hands full doing all these exciting things with Bob's video property. In addition to what Bob mentioned, in my role as general manager of the website, my view extends beyond the website to the yard and the other places beyond. So specifically, I also manage our YouTube presence, where we have another 300 videos online. It's a different 300 than the 1,400 on bobvila.com. And I'm also in a number of discussions. We are in a number of discussions with various portals and advertising brand partners to get Bob back in new video. This time, though, rest assured it'll be online original web series rather than traditional broadcast television.
Joe, could you frame a little bit what digital broadcasting group, sure, what you are doing in the online video space?
Picking up where actually you left off, we create original content, video content for the web. We do originals. We did a 10-episode series with Kiefer Sutherland last spring, but most of our work is done with brands, creating video content, wrapping those brands inside of them. We run a video ad network to drive viewership and tune-in. And next month, we're going to be launching a home and design channel on YouTube as part of their YouTube Original Partners program.
We're going to talk about this in
well, we'll come back
a little
to
bit.
That.
Okay.
Steve. Cold Spaces.
Cold Spaces. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Hi. So to answer the question, you might wonder, you know, why does a lawyer need to, you know, be involved at all? You know, who are you going to sue? What I've been doing over the last 20 years is very interesting. I started off working in the cable TV business, and from my perspective, there was the big screen, and the big screen just keeps having babies. And you know, television evolved from the big screen, and then cable TV evolved from the big screen, and then internet evolved from the big screen, and now mobile is evolving from the big screen. And every time that happens, there are new business models. And so that's what we do. We develop the revenue structure and the business model and the contracts that allow this stuff to get monetized and figure out how people are going to make money from it.
Excellent. Maybe going back to you, Bob, you have such a long career in media. You've been hosting a television show, a couple of television shows for 30 years. You wrote 11 or 12 books. So 11, I'm sorry, but next one is coming soon, maybe?
No,
okay. Anyway, but the internet is the internet is quite a different beast because suddenly you have this two-way communication. You know, the audience is going back and asking questions, and you have Twitter and you have Facebook. How is that experience different from everything else you've been doing? And what surprised you most? How do you interact now?
I don't get too much fan mail anymore because it's instant. And that's one of the really interesting things. I was thinking about it the other day. We used to get big bags of fan mail, and much of it was the regular stuff where they're asking for an autograph or a photograph or whatever, but much of it was photographs and long letters about their own projects and experiences and looking for commentary and advice. And that was then. I mean, we began producing Bob Vila's Home Again. What was it? It was around 99, 2000, I guess. No, what am I saying? It was about 89, 1990. And that was after 10 years of PBS programming. And I also produced a series for A&E that was all about historic houses and visits to the houses of Palladio in Italy and the English country estates. Anyway, there's this huge amount of exposure out there through the big screen. And what I've noticed in the last few years that all of that kind of correspondence, if you will, has now translated into instant kind of messaging, instant kind of communications, where there are still the same number of questions and the same number of points of view, but it's just fast now.
It's very fast, and which leads to the next question. It's a lot of work to deal with all that interaction. How did you go about to find the team for the website?
Well, we, as I said a minute ago, we looked at the old website and we realized that I had to do some very major renovations to it. And so, in fact...
Which you're good at, right?
In fact, we took the traditional approach of finding a headhunter on the West Coast who specialized in media properties and brands. And we went through the traditional interview process and... you know, I think one of the things in Gretchen's favor was that Harvard Business School degree because of a certain prejudice. My wife was on the faculty at the Harvard Business School for almost a decade, and so I had kind of an exalted opinion of anybody who'd gone an MBA from Harvard. That did have a lot to do with
it.
And you are justifying it, absolutely.
Plus she has some experience in the online space, so but we should mention that.
as much as the interview process in some senses, as Bob says, was completely conventional, in another regard it was completely of today's day and age, because the headhunter found me on LinkedIn.com, and I never met this headhunter. To this day, I've never met him. It's only been emails and phone calls, and you know, that was the process that led me here today.
What would interest me is, where does your audience today come from? Because the younger generation that's growing up hasn't seen you on television. So how is the audience difference now? Where does it come from? How do you grow it on the internet? Maybe it's a question for both of
well,
you.
Well, I'd like to make a couple of comments about that. And one of them is, one of the sweetest things about my career is that I do get a lot of young people come up to me to tell me how they used to watch This Old House with Dad on Saturday morning so that Mom could sleep late.
Here? Someone here?
And so
in the back, okay.
And I can't,
thank you.
I cannot tell you how lovely that is. And even lovelier sometimes young people who come up to tell me that they are today architects or engineers or contractors or interior designers or whatever, because they got exposed to this field watching my shows. And then the other component was a silly sitcom that was inspired by my life, and it was called Home Improvement on ABC, and became a runaway hit. And it's a funny story, because Disney produced that based on me. They totally admitted it, but they never ran it by me. They never checked with my lawyers at the time. They never checked with PBS or anything.
Steve,
they just
Steve, where were you?
He was still in school.
And watching the show at least.
It was a long time ago. But anyway, the upshot of that was that this hit became an intro for me to a whole generation of 10-year-olds and 8-year-olds who are now, you know, first-time home buyers, first-time renovators, people in their 20s and early 30s. So the traditional media led the way in that direction.
And that's an interesting point, is that it's these, all of the new technologies really are ways to connect. And they're making, it's just as you were saying, they're making connection much more quick and much more immediate. And I think a lot of young people have taken advantage of that in ways that nobody on our panel really even understands fully.
And
it is driven in part by traditional media. And I think we've learned that over the last year or so, is that traditional media events, a television show being broadcast, drives a huge amount of social media, and it all works together. And that's the hard thing to get a handle on, is how everything is going to work together.
Sorry.
No, don't worry about it.
I think the other thing to consider is that this is 2012 and not 1999. The internet is everywhere, right? And everything is content. Everybody has a mobile phone stuck to their hand right now, and you guys are probably Facebooking, Twittering about what we're doing. So the fact of the matter is, what we're talking about is putting content into an ecosystem that is already totally wired to amplify that and to engage with that.
Right.
So maybe the question is, all right, how are we connecting with consumers, but how are we guiding that connectivity? How are we guiding that engagement? Less than how are we making this work?
And we've seen how it can really get out of control, right? I mean, you know, the if you just a couple of months ago or less than a month ago, you saw the Pipa and Sopa reaction. And I think Hollywood was completely blindsided by that. I mean, the entire internet, no matter what your politics, rose up against this thing that from a, you know,
maybe
lobbyist,
you should,
Washington
for
lobbyist
the non-legal people in the room, you should maybe explain what,
okay, so,
what these
so this
two
was,
words are.
It was, it's really hard to explain briefly, but it was, I'm sure,
the
how many people are familiar with it already? Okay, so a lot of people know what Pipa and Sopa were, and they were essentially new regulations. It was a new bill that they were trying to get through that would prescribe internet content, and essentially the whole internet, no matter what their politics was, rose up against it. And it was something that, if you thought of it from a Disney perspective, talking to their lobbyists, was a completely completely innocent concept of protecting intellectual property, and that's how it was presented to Congress. But all of the internet rose up against it because of how much it would close down interaction and use of content. And so these things are very difficult to control. And, you know, from one perspective, you know, as an entertainment attorney, you'd want something to blow up this way. But I think you're right. You do have to direct how it goes.
Going back to the formats and what works on the internet as opposed to broadcast, what are the most successful shows or content pieces on the website right now? And where do you see it developing from here on?
How-to is still important, and innovation. How-to, I mean, we were just talking about this and looking back, and there's a little segment that shows me looking like somebody else, and it happened 20 years ago, and it was basically an alternative to using clamps, carpenter's clamps. You don't always have them, and you're on a job site, and it was just my sidekick, Riley, and I showing people how to take some extra boards and some 3-inch drywall screws and basically clamp something down after you've put the glue on. How-tos have always been magic. They remove mystery. And if they're done well and cut together nicely, they can be very exciting. Innovation, obviously, everybody's interested in new ideas. We did a program in St. Pete in Florida where we got involved with some folks that were recycling empty shipping containers. And of course, everybody knows the story. We buy everything from China, we don't export anything, so we end up with all these empty tin cans. And what we were doing essentially was stringing together, cutting them, bolting them, putting them together 3 or 4 at a time, and putting roof trusses over them and creating houses. And they were sturdy. We have hurricane codes to deal with in Florida. They were relatively inexpensive. They had some challenges, like it's going to heat up, isn't it? And some solutions, like the same kind of spray-up paint that ceramic-based paint that is used on the space shuttle can be used on old shipping containers. So, you know, these are two parts of the equation that I think are very, very important.
Excellent. And I believe you also start a new show in the green movement.
Well, that's a long story, too. You know, around, I think it was 2009, Bobby Kennedy, the eldest son of the late Senator Kennedy, and his wife were living in Bedford, New York, in a 100-year-old colonial that had a flood while they were gone to the family's summer place in Hyannisport. And they returned 3 weeks later. Why they didn't have any kind of caretaker or anything, I don't know, to find a flood in the basement and black mold growing up all the way up to the attic. And through mutual friends and everything, some people decided it would be a great idea to do a TV show about how to make a sick house into a healthy greenhouse. And so that's where the concept of a, you know, Bobbila Building Green came about. We shot a pilot for it. We looked not only at their project and what would have to happen there, but we looked at innovations, including an architect called Alan Shope in upstate New York, who had built a wedge-shaped house into a hillside. And we looked at projects that were happening right around the corner in the Bronx that were Habitat for Humanity projects using all sorts of green technologies, including green roofs and growing plants on the roof, and et cetera. all this material and all this thought did not come to fruition in terms of traditional media, traditional TV, because of the economy crashing and because of the changing trends in traditional TV. And so the opportunity was there for us to kind of use that material and grow that material at bobvila.com.
And looking at content or formats in another dimension, we're seeing a wide range of what people are enjoying. For example, our videos on YouTube are all 30 seconds. It's a series of 30-second how-to vignettes that Bob taped coincident with when he was producing the TV series. That's what we have up on YouTube, partly as an expeditious, opportunistic thing, and partly because we did think that how-to was still popular. And they're doing very well. On the website, we tend to have longer videos. I mean, longer, you know, long in a web sense. They're 3 minutes, 4 minutes long, and those are also proving popular. So we see a number of different options working. And when we use social media to amplify the audience for them and mobilize them, again, we're able to draw people to formats of a number of lengths, and we're seeing that working. What we're not seeing so much is that people are watching entire episodes. I mean, you can, it's basically just a bunch of videos strung together, but we have it set up so that you can easily see, you know, episode of, you know, whatever this week was, four clips put together. Most people don't watch four at once, but they'll watch one clip of that episode, which again is that 3 or 4 minute length.
Excellent. Let's talk a little bit about the elephant in the room. It's everyone here understands how to make money with broadcast. It's not so obvious when it comes to the internet. Does it pay off to launch a new business like that, and how do you make money?
I can address this a little bit. It's, you have to see this in the historical perspective. We're seeing the first money from this now. It's very, very early days with this. And as you know, as we've just discussed in the last topic, we talked about the different formats and the different things that that Gretchen is trying to do on the website. And there's less experimentation now than 5 years ago. 5 years ago, it was harder to make money. Now it's a little easier to make money, but it's still early days. And the experimentation is really where we're going to learn the most money that can be made. And the ways to make money are proliferating. Very much like you were talking about, it used to be that you got a sponsor and did a television show, and that was it. Maybe you got advertisers to, you know, do 30-second spots on the television show. Well, now there's so much more creativity involved. It's almost, you know, mind exploding to think about all the different ways. And that's the problem, is trying to focus on what works and expand upon what works and then leave behind what doesn't, because it is very much an experimental, an experiment and see what works, and also honing it for each particular thing. So, you know, here we're honing it to a home improvement topic, which is going to be completely different than Justin Bieber. And the model was not that different years ago, as between a Justin Bieber or home improvement. Sean Cassidy, was on television too in the early 70s, and it wasn't that much different. Now it's very different.
Maybe Joe, you can address this a little bit. How does the split between the traditional sponsorship, ads, pre-roll, post-roll, how does that work in your business?
Well, before I tackle that, something that just to sort of harp on what you were saying, I think the interesting question while we're thinking about early days is not whether you can make money, but who's going to be making money and how. Because the fact of the matter is, there are, 300-400 million people on YouTube. There are 850 million people on Facebook, right? And brands, whether they be brands like Bob or brands like Acme Corp, can cultivate an audience, a really sizable audience, using the tools at their disposal. They don't need a network. They don't need a studio. And they don't need a cable provider, right? They can build their own audience on their own. And so as we think about content, whether it's brand-sponsored content or Bob-sponsored content, so to speak, the question becomes, how do I cultivate that audience, and then how do I monetize that audience? Because it's the audience and the eyeballs that really what we're talking about. So if I'm a brand, certainly I'm not necessarily making money, I'm maybe saving money. Right? Instead of putting together a 30-second spot and running it for 2,000 points, I'm putting together a 40-episode web show. And I'm putting it to the 10 million Facebook fans that I've cultivated over the last 3 years. From Bob's perspective, certainly, he's coming in as a content provider, and I think, as Stephen alluded to, has a number of avenues in which to think about how do I partner with a brand, how do I cultivate an audience, and how do I be in the intersection of that relationship.
Yeah, and I guess the good news is for all of us, there are new Comscore numbers that the ad sales have increased tremendously to 20% last year. It's at $7.1 billion, and no one would have thought this number is... Right. So I think we're still at the beginning of a development.
The second question that you had asked about pre-roll and in-stream and in-page, and there's a lot of mucky details in that. And that's an IAB conference, not a South by Southwest conference. And some people are very above board with it, and some people are less above board with it, and so I think the you know that's a question for another panel about what the mechanism is for the best kind of advertising online. But the fact of the matter is, I think what we'll see is brands continuing to play with their media mix. I think, as you alluded to, putting a greater importance to the medium as a means of allowing people to engage with content and then socialize that engagement. And that will continue to be really cost-effective for them.
Yeah, I want to expand on what he said. I was just looking in the phone for the name of the person. I can't remember who it is, but there was it's a comedian who actually just went direct, and that's what we're talking about.
Louis C.K.
Louis C.K., right. Louis C.K. just went direct. He was looking at a $1 million deal with a network, and he said, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself and see what happens. Then he made $10 million just going direct. And
then his phone didn't stop ringing for an entire week.
Including $5 for me, $5 for all of you.
And you know, it's very interesting. The going direct, the disintermediation that's happening now is fascinating, because it's not everyone who's going to be successful at it. And it's going to depend on how you do it and how you define it for each star. And the a famous brand, I think it's Nike, the CEO of Nike said, you know, we're not really in the business of supporting media, we're in the business of connecting with customers. And if you remember that, and in your work trying to, you know, get sponsors and look for people who will support the content, that's really the point, is that's what they're trying to do. And if you can dial into that, then you can make some money.
But if you don't go directly, then we're faced with the problem, our traditional problem, aggregating enough eyeballs for advertisers and the traditional model. And that's where a lot of the experimentation comes in that Steve was talking about and Joe was talking about earlier. So we're experimenting with pretty much every avenue there is to get distribution. So, of course, we hope you come in droves to our website to see all of the video. But if you also are a YouTube denizen, great. You know, we've got 300 videos up there, and soon a lot of the library will be up on YouTube as well. If you prefer to watch your video on Hulu, well, we have a deal with Hulu. Search Bob Vila, voila, the video library is up on Hulu. If you'd like a website that has video on it and subscribes to aggregators like Collective or YouMe, great, we've got you covered. We have a deal with those aggregators, and the websites who are their customers can say, click, fine, show Bob Vila video. So we don't believe that the audience and all of you are only going to come to BobVila.com, but you know we're going where the audience is, and we're experimenting with getting ourselves in front of you in all the different places that you experience video. And we're in the early days of seeing how all of that works, we're giving it a shot.
And radio,
and also traditional broadcasters. We have a deal in the works where reruns, traditional reruns on traditional television stations, if you can remember what that was like, is something we hope to premiere in September of this year. And stations are, the station group is being put together by an agent in that field as we speak, and we're having some nice early results with about 30 stations have already lined up on that traditional television syndication program.
Excellent. That pretty much answered my distribution strategy question, so we can move on. But there are other big players moving into online video. We touched YouTube, and Joe, you are launching a channel there. Can you, and most of you know that YouTube has announced to launch 100 channels with original content on their platform. Joe, can you give us a little insights on what's happening there and how you expect that to expand? And
sure. Well, I can tell you what... as you pointed out, in terms of early days, it'll be really interesting to see when 100 new channels come on board. There are, as you guys well know, really amazing, fantastic, super creative folks in that space, and they've mastered that platform. And we have the opportunity to learn from those guys, and we're very excited to provide, a really sort of consistent voice in the home and design space to the YouTube audience. I think there are two other home and design channels. What will be interesting, certainly, is to when we look at that marketplace or that market in about a year, when we have the traditional YouTube celebrities, and we've mixed them in with Madonna and Shaq and the guys who are coming and kind of making a go of it and are perhaps a little more celebrity driven, and that'll be a really interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see how consumers interact with digital video, knowing they could find A-list celebrities and top-notch content on that platform, as opposed to just searching for stuff or finding that video of the cat and the drapes. It'll certainly I think elevate the profile of digital video, to be sure. Thank you for the laugh, by the way.
So, Steve, who owns the rights when advertisers fund online video and talent and stars are in it?
Who owns the rights? Well, some of these questions are better YouTube questions than Joe questions.
It was actually targeted at your neighbor, but you can answer it too.
Well, I'm going to give you the classic lawyer answer.
I'm going to scoop that.
It depends.
It's a typical lawyer one.
In the case of Bob Vila, Bob Vila owns the rights to a large percentage of the past television shows. It's an unusual situation. Usually they're owned by a variety of rights holders.
You had a good lawyer then.
I'll just refer back. Every single one of us, everyone who's on any panel at South by Southwest, of which there are many, have signed a release, a presentation release, which assigns to South by Southwest the rights to this panel. So, those documents are important, so before you sign your name at the bottom, you should look, and then you'll know who owns the rights.
We will be famous one day, this panel.
but that's really the answer. It depends. Every deal is different, and retaining the rights, you need leverage to retain the rights. And in the case of Bob Vila, he had the leverage at a certain point and made the move, and it's a really good thing that he did.
Perfect. Before I open up to the audience, I have one more question for you, Bob. What advice would you have for talent that is looking to build out, online video property or brand out there?
We've already touched on social media, the importance of using social media as a creative force in this direction. And when I was really kind of examining my choice to do all this in the last few years, I kept harping on, I need young people. And I think today I would say I need a spectrum. And it's interesting because we have somebody on board in our crew back in New York who's a real veteran of the shelter press, and he's a very important component. And we have somebody who is early 20s who is invaluable in other more technical ways. And you've got a mixture. And I was invited the other day to record something for something called Speakaboo. My first grandchild came about a year and a half ago, so I'm very attuned to this sort of stuff. But Speakaboo essentially is creating a library of children's classic stories that you read to your kid, like the Three Little Pigs. And I was invited to be the reader for actually all of the pigs. And I enjoyed that enormously, but it also explained to me the fact that this world is so incredibly broad right now that when you're considering a direction that you want to take and creating something, you have to look across that spectrum.
Perfect. Over to you guys. Maybe you could just quickly give us your name and what you're doing so we can put it in a bit of perspective.
Sure. My name's Ryan Lawler. I write about online video and distribution of digital media for a site called GigaOhm.com.
Read it every day.
Thank you.
This weekend. All right, fine. You can have my Sunday.
So the question is, I'm wondering if there are certain types of content that work on the web better than others. I imagine with, you know, something like home improvement or DIY type stuff, you know, you've got this vast library of content where if someone's looking for a certain type of project, they can search for it and they can find your videos online. Whereas I know, you know, Joe is producing shows that are more sort of what you think of as the traditional, you know, network television primetime model. And so just wondering about the economics, like how it works in terms of the audience that you need to aggregate to make both of those models work.
I think that it depends on how you think you're going to drive your audience to that video, or maybe it's like this chicken and egg thing. What's the way I'm going to drive audience to my video, and what's the nature of the video? So, for example, some of our most popular videos are because they rank well in Google. You know, as much as the single biggest search term that we have on the site is Bob Vila, single biggest keyword. But it's not a majority of our traffic. I mean, even one single big keyword still is at the head of a very, very long tail. So a lot of the video on the site does well because it's responding to something that somebody is searching on. So, for example, they might search on how to install insulation, how to dry out a basement. We happen to have some really good practical how-to videos on the site that respond to those Google words. However, you could take a completely different kind of content, like more inspirational, more celebrity-driven. And if you have a social media angle of driving people to that video, like if you could really put your Twitter audience or your Facebook audience set to work on driving them to that content, then that may be a way that you can get enough eyeballs for that kind of video. And it's of a very different nature. So you have to figure out the promotion set and the nature set that works together for the whole thing to be large enough to drive the audience that justifies the dollars. Joe, you may have some perspective on how you...
Well, for us, it sort of depends on the kind of project. The large non-branded projects that we're doing, the idea is to do them, launch them online, but then exploit other windows. So international rights, SVOD rights, mm-hmm. EST rights, things of that nature, so that the investment in the production gets, you know, you can get a return on it over time. In terms of the branded front, it depends on the brand and what the brand's objectives are. Obviously, reach and generating video views are going to be super critical, but conversation and engagement levels are also big primary brand driving factors. So it kind of depends on the project, but in terms of those two types of projects, those would be the big KPIs for us.
Hi, my name is Patty. I work for AARP. And I just have a couple of questions. We have 40 million members, and a lot of them live in rural areas. They don't have the capacity to do high-speed downloads. While your content is great, how are you reaching out to an older population that doesn't have access to a lot of the technology but need your content since they're on fixed incomes and can't afford somebody to do it for them, and they need to do it themselves?
Well, as much as the single biggest asset type that we have on the site is videos, and our panel is obviously on that topic, so we're primarily addressing it, we do have 800 articles. We do have a newsletter database of well into the six figures. So some of the ways that we communicate with people that don't have fast download speeds is that the flat text information, the blog, Bob's blog on the site, we hope delivers them very valuable information. It's just not in video, or if they're a subscriber to one of our newsletters, then that's a traditional way that we still think is very important for keeping up the connection with our audience and driving traffic to the site.
Hi, I'm Robin Hahn. I work for Radio Systems Corporation. We make the Pet Safe and Invisible Fence brand of products for dogs. And if you ever want to install one of our pet doors on one of your videos, that would be great.
Is that a sponsorship pitch?
I'm a brand manager. I got to do what I got to do. My question.
Call me later.
Call me later, too.
So most of our video, we do a lot of how-to videos on how to train your dog, how do you have a better experience with your dog. And I imagine after all the years of content generation, there's only, while you have a whole lot more facets in a home, there's only so many ways you can talk about installing cabinets or tile floor and so on. So I'm just curious what your strategy is or what some of your guiding principles are for keeping your content fresh all the time. I know you mentioned innovation, but what are some of the other ways that you think about making that happen?
Dogs?
The interrelationship between us and new product lines, I guess as an example, I'm going to go back a bit, but there was a point in time where the European style kitchen cabinet hit our marketplace, and we traditionally looked at kitchen cabinets as boxes that we made here in the States and that we scribed and cut and made to fit. And then the Europeans came along with a system that essentially showed us how to hang a metal bar on the wall and make sure that it was level and hang the cabinets off of that and bring in cabinets that had metal legs that were adjustable so that we just set them in place and adjusted the legs to where the thing was level and then we put them. Anyway, I think this kind of innovation applies to products all over the place. And so it's almost like it comes to us.
Yeah. We were just at the International Builders Show in Orlando at the beginning of February. And one thing that was amazing is the level of innovation in even the most mundane products. Like, who knew that you could make insulation out of soybeans? Well, you can make insulation out of soybeans. So some of it is the product innovation that happens. And also, I think, if you take the same product and explain it with a new cast of characters and a new talent, at a heart, it may be that how you put together a clamp is the same as it's been for a long, long time. But if Bob is on screen doing it with somebody from the next generation, somebody, a millennial, say, it's the same lesson but told through a new voice. So I think that can help take the same material and make it fresh. Also, a very big thing is how you can then share that material. So again, it may be the same lesson on how you train your dog, but how easy is it for people to pin something on Pinterest from where that material is on your website or to share it via Twitter and Facebook. We've spent a lot of time in the beginning of this year upgrading our social sharing features on the site so that it's the same content, but we're hopefully making it easier for you to communicate what you like with your friends from the options we give you on the site.
My name's Steve Berry. I'm with Hemmings Motor News, and we're starting to make video content right now. And one of the big discussions we have internally is how we make that content and work with sponsors without kind of compromising our editorial integrity. And you guys discussed that maybe you start with a sponsor, start with a product, and build content around that. Yeah. How do you toe that line where it's not completely crass and you don't alienate people who look to you to be a responsible editorial voice? While you're still selling somebody's product?
The one thing that guided my career was maintaining this kind of level of integrity, even while I became the spokesman for Craftsman Tools. I always made sure that all tools had equal time on the show. And if you arrived on the show as a guest and you were going to install a window, I made sure you used your tools. And if none of them were Craftsmen, that's fine. So I guess what I'm saying is that early on, you have to establish these standards of integrity that assure your audience that you are fair-minded.
Yeah. We deal with a very, very similar set of issues, particularly when the brand is working closely with us to craft the show. And so the guiding, there's a smell test. Does it smell okay, right? Or is it really, in reality, is it sweaty? Am I, as a consumer, going to think this is sweaty? But ultimately, what we're talking about is levels of integration that are authentic. that feel accessible, but not overly branded. And you know, it's a delicate balance. Okay. Really delicate.
I mean, it's all about trust in the end.
Yeah.
Hi, Howard Greenstein from Inc. Magazine. So, you know, you're talking about sites like Hulu and YouTube, et cetera, and you're looking at lots and lots and lots of eyeballs. But, you know, we know that in the digital age, you can track much clearer from people being logged in, demographic, psychographic, history of moving to different sites. So how come cost per thousand and how come those kinds of measurements are still used when we know exactly who's watching videos, you know, down to the person, and we can target ads to the person, whereas on TV it's still this broad swath? Why is online video so much cheaper than TV still?
Audience. I mean, my I don't know if I'm qualified to answer really, but it's just a smaller audience.
It's a more fragmented audience, but I think maybe the question is how come network TV is so damn expensive? Mm. And I think the answer there is because there are only 4 people selling, or 5 people, or 10 people, right? And they are the incumbents in many ways, and they actually have set the parameters of the business practices and certainly their metrics. So let's check in another number of years, and we'll see what the media mix looks like.
Yeah, I think it's changing a lot, and it's a matter of, you know, aggregating that audience. You know, network television has been successful doing that, but there's a little bit of inertia they're riding on still with that, and the online video business is just getting started, so there's no inertia. Anything that you do is what you did, so that's my only answer to that.
Yeah, I think that it's still hard for agencies and large advertisers to really fully trust that a strategy focused around getting people who are this week thinking about installing new garage doors, and they'll pay $100 CPM mm-hmm. because they want this week, not just garage doors, but garage doors this week. I sense that that's a hard argument, and an argument that agencies are absolutely not bringing to advertisers.
And it's a small work, too.
Right.
To sell it.
They are to some extent, depending on the advertiser. But understand, as we think about our own consumer behaviors, there are 4 screens that run our lives. And we go from screen to screen to screen. And you're buying in different screens in different places and spaces. So I think TV still works. It still works as a marketing vehicle. It still totally works as a reach vehicle. And I don't know, you know, I come from a movie studio business. You can't open a movie without a little TV. Right, but in the same respect that the other screens are just as important. So, if consumers are bouncing from screen to screen to screen, then you want to be in all the screens.
And we can't wait for it to catch up, Howard. I think the 20% number that Stephanie mentioned earlier, in terms of the growth in online video advertising that Comscore reported from 2010 to 2011, is very encouraging. But you know what? Viewership went up 44%. So. Why did the dollars go up 44%? Why did they go up 64%? It's the inertia that Steve and Joe are talking about.
Yeah, I think there's another kind of inertia too, and it's what you referred to before about the system. You know, the advertising agencies work a certain way, and they're not going to just immediately change their behavior. And even when the numbers force, you know, we've learned this in the music business, it almost doesn't matter what the numbers do. People won't change their behavior sometimes.
Hi, everyone. Speaking of agencies, Bob, BBDO New York. Hello. 2 questions around content production. First, how are you rethinking content production for consumption on tablets and mobile devices, especially around how-to content, since you can take the device to your project space? And then secondly, related to social media, are you using it to promote content, or are you getting community feedback to drive content production? Thank you.
Very good question. My first... thoughts in that direction a couple of years ago was that I wanted to be available to look over somebody's shoulder on an iPhone while they were having a shopping experience. I used the Home Improvement Center, the Home Depot, as my example. And the project I had in mind was somebody wants to build window boxes because their wife has been saying so for weeks and weeks, and he's finally going to buy the wood, but he doesn't know what kind of wood to use, and he's looking at a half a dozen different boards, and he's going to be able to get advice from me that tells him to use redwood or cedar or pressure. Anyway, that's the kind of first direction that I wanted to go in, but it's become a much broader set of opportunities just in the last few months. Yep. To wit,
we were talking about our mobile strategy just this morning, and we're looking at both designing projects, or rather applications specifically for the tablet, but also making sure that we're taking our existing assets and making more kind of e-magazines, if you will, that allow you to take that information on the road. But an e-magazine approach is only one thing. The Bob in Your Pocket for the aisles of Home Depot is another kind of application to develop. So basically, we have to do mobile in two or three different ways to cover the whole spectrum. So we have to think very flexibly about content production for mobile. And you bet, we look at all the numbers. We love the data that comes from what is on Google Analytics and what we see and what people retweet. We look at all of that to very much say, whoa, you know, this is really hot. You know, for example, it's fascinating. One of the most popular stories on this site is about, and one of the most popular videos, is about, as Bob mentioned, the container housing. So you bet we're in production right now on more slideshows and content around container houses, because you all seem to really like it. So we listen.
What's interesting about that, and I think the woman from the pet brand company asked about how we keep content fresh, and thinking about the notion of Bob in Your Pocket and these containers, is that I can imagine that all of your content are really based in people's stories.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because we're talking about homes, and I'm, you know, the story of my home is very different from the story of your home, and it's very inherently personal. And at the end of the day, we're talking about content creation and storytelling. And that's how really you think about keeping things fresh, by embedding them in real people's lives like that, and really telling someone's story, because every person has a different story. So, I don't know.
I just think this is the BobVila.com story is very exciting. It's very cutting edge. I mean, you're hearing here a very open hooded explanation of everything. You know, this is what we're working on right now. It's very exciting.
I think there was a second part to that question on how social media, your post on Facebook, is that simply to drive traffic to the site, or how do you monetize it?
Yes, it's both to drive traffic to the site and also to just be in the mix and be in the conversation and contribute to it. So, for example, in our Twitter strategy, we do consciously use it to link back to content on the site. If we publish a new article, we are tweeting about it and providing a link to that article. But we also spend equally as much time, literally consciously, we tweet out to other people's home improvement material that we think is Bob-like and fits the brand. But the link is to that other piece of content, because we want to contribute to people's learning about home improvement, not only by driving people to our own site. So we use social media in both directions.
Excellent.
Hi, Ken Schumann with Trulia. I'm the head of communications, and talking about Twitter, this flows perfectly. 45 minutes before the panel, Bob's tweeting about 50 different playhouses for your kid. Mm-hmm. Is Bob's handle handled by somebody else, and how does Bob have an authentic voice in Twitter and actually engage with consumers if someone else is running, presuming someone else is running his Twitter handle, and how do you strike that balance?
It's a mixture. It's a mixture. And, for example, at midday today, I took a picture out of the 26-story window, out of my window on the 26th floor of the Hilton, of this amazing rainstorm, because I just wanted to, you know, tweet about this amazing rainstorm and this festival is supposed to be so terrific, and everything's outside, and there's music and everything else. So, but it's a mixture, because there are a lot of things that I'm interested in sharing, whether it's travel-related or hobby-related or whatever. And then there's a lot of other things that make sense for, you know, people at the office to be putting out there for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, we very much think about channeling Bob. We talked about channeling Bob. We hope we keep that brand voice consistent, and we always hear if we don't. Luckily, those phone calls are very few and far between. It would be hard for us to only, just in terms of the volume that we want to accomplish in participating in social media, we find we need to supplement Bob's own individual efforts with those of his team, but hopefully that team is so closely bound at the hip with him, and after, you know, many months of working with him, and it's, you know, a small team. We're lean and mean. There's not, you know, a lot of levels or distance between Bob and the folks who do speak in his voice.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about the orchid like thing earlier today, and you know, all of this sort of ties together a bunch of the questions. You know, there is that integrity issue with this, and that's why your question is such a hard one to answer. But you know, Bob's interests are changing all the time, and sometimes it goes in a new direction, landscaping or green energy. And so I guess as a follower of Bob on Twitter, you don't necessarily know if it's him that's tweeting, but it might be. And definitely, like Gretchen said, he's very involved with the other people on the team, and it's a very small team. He's involved with the other people on it, and so hopefully you try to get a group think going where everyone is moving in the same direction.
Hi, my name is Rochelle Wise. I work for Eric Organic. It's a small Amish furniture company, and we're just kind of dipping our foot into online video, and we don't have a really huge following yet. So I'm wondering what you would recommend for a small company that's just kind of getting started as far as driving viewers to your content. Assuming we have really awesome content all ready to go, how do you get people to it? What's your best method of advertising?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Google Trends, you know, AdWord Trends can be your best friend. So you'll, I'm sure, be looking at what kind of keywords relate to your area of furniture, organic furniture, furniture making. Try to hook in your metadata to the searches that are most likely to result in somebody coming to your site. And Google can be a very nice driver to video. Obviously, it's the metadata around the video that really counts. Mm-hmm. Also, we've really had very good luck with StumbleUpon. It is, you know, paid traffic acquisition, but you can do it at a fairly cost-effective rate, and that exposes a new audience to your video. And don't forget contests. You know, are you giving away a piece of furniture every month? You can really just draw a whole new audience, some portion of which will stay to really be interested in what you have to say. And then there are others who are just contest hunters, and you'll never see them again. But it's a great way of exposing yourself to a very broad swath of people, because there isn't anybody who doesn't like something free. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend that you try contest promotions, as Bob was mentioning.
Thanks. Yeah. Uh-huh.
GoDaddy uses Danica.
I'm not sure how strict the organizers are going to be about time, but I guess this has to be our last question here.
Great. Hi, I'm Brooks Thomas from Southwest Airlines, do emerging media with them. I'm also a child who grew up watching This Old House with my father on Saturday morning. I'd love to know how much the consumer drives your content curation, whether you're measuring that sentiment on social media, how you're going about doing it, and how quick the turnaround is for a video on that for your team.
Well, we are hoovers for the stats on what people are watching, what they're reading, and in some cases, other than for video, the turnaround time is very quick. So, you know, within a matter of, I don't know, a handful of days, and we saw how consistently, again, going back to our favorite container story, we said, we need to expand this franchise, so it can be, you know, just very, very short. In terms of video, it's a little bit longer. Right now, our new video production strategy rests on finding portal and or advertiser partners. We're not in production out of our own editorial budgets right now. So that's where folks like Joe and our conversations with some of Bob's spokespersons, like Bella Wood and even Pure the Space Heater, come into play. You know, 2 years down the road, when we're producing video more in a quick way with some of those partners in place, then our aspiration is to get new video production to turn around as quickly as now a slideshow or a blog post or an article.
Sorry, I just wanted to follow up. Do you have an editorial calendar surrounding that, or and how frequent is it, or how robust is it?
Oh, we absolutely have an editorial calendar. There's a main theme every month. January was painting. February was storage. March is energy saving. Lawn and garden is April. Kitchens. Anybody have any kitchen questions? May. May is your month. That editorial calendar is driven by the executive editor, the gentleman that Bob mentioned, who's kind of an expert in the field from many years at different shelter properties, and by Google Analytics and by what we're hearing on social media. So it's an interactive, no pun intended, process by which we develop the editorial calendar.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. I think we've all learned this is a small but very energetic team, and I personally admire Bob for doing this. I mean, jumping. I mean, he had such a picture-perfect career. He's not, you know, only worked a lot, but he's involved in a zillion other projects we couldn't even mention here, like restoring the Ernest Hemingway house in Cuba. And he's really doing amazing things. But just, you know, going beyond that and launching a website and diving into that, and it's a lot of work, and he's put together a great team. And it's thank you very much for sharing all of the insights with us.